Jim Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Get a treat today. Let's talk about the International Harvester brand and what happened to it. And this is a book that was authored by Paul Wallum. The title, International Harvester, The Breakup, What Really Happened. And Paul Wallum, I can speak a little bit to how important this subject is to me. My father worked at International Harvester in East Moline. My late grandfather was the plant manager there. I had a late uncle that worked there. Of course, we know all about the dealerships across the great state of Illinois. So let's begin our conversation. What motivated you to write a book like this?
Corporate Tragedy book did a good job, we thought, of talking about the dissolution of Harvester from a corporate standpoint. And based on the Crane's review prior to 1984, but what always puzzled me was that there was no discussion about the opinions of the people who really own all the products, and that's the farmers, as well as the dealers, the ones who sold all those products. So I chose to start interviewing dealers and farmers around the country in Canada and Sweden, and found out that the views were probably similar to each other, and so that's why I wanted to put it into a book.
And you call it, basically, you can kind of describe it as a perfect storm of problems that killed the iconic brand. Can you elaborate? Exactly. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, there were so many combinations of things. Let's go back from the mid '50s. There was dividends kept being paid at a high level, and the money was not there for plant improvement, and there wasn't enough money for good testing. So there was some significant failures in equipment that wasn't tested well. Then through the years, we get into the 1980s when we shouldn't have never been in construction equipment business, in my opinion. That was siphoning off a great amount of money from the truck and farm equipment divisions. And then we get into the 80s where interest rates went to 22%. And the company arrived at that point was short on cash anyway, and suddenly then the banks started getting worried, and everybody started getting worried within Harvester and the dealer organization, and then it just sort of all blew up by the late, or mid, rather, 80s, when Tenneco bought out the Harvester farm equipment business.
And this story hits close to home for you because you were a former IH dealer, right? So can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, yes. I was a farm kid, and then I went to work for Harvester right out of college for 13 years, and my last 2 years with the company was a manager of farm equipment export worldwide, and I traveled worldwide in over 50 countries, and felt then that I really didn't want to continue to travel. I had children that I was estranged from, so I resigned and bought a dealership. And so from that point on, saw it from a different standpoint.
Well, and you talk about International Harvester in the brand, and, you know, you speak to kind of the Midwest roots, and, you know, we know about the Farmall plant in Rock Island. You had the IH plant in East Moline. I know there was a facility in Burlington, Iowa. I think a facility in Canton, Illinois. So the roots of IH were well established in Illinois and this part of the country. The culture of IH was pretty important in this part of the U.S., right?
Oh, my. my, yes, from the time in the early 1850s, late 1840s, that Cyrus McCormick moved to Chicago, it became an Illinois company, full blast, and that's where all the local plants started. The problem, Jim, though, was that all these years later, those plants had not been upgraded and rebuilt, and they had become old and inefficient. And your grandfather probably knew that more than anybody.
So when you see the IH logo in the red and black color, what does that still mean to you?
Well, it was, I remember when my wife asked at one time, will Harvester always be around? And I said, absolutely, it's a 150-year-old company. Well, I was not quite right there. But in a way, Jim, with 7,500 members of International Harvester Collectors Club in 42 chapters all over the world, that trademark is still as strong as ever. There's more members of the club now than there used to be, collectors. And so it's a very, very strong memory brand, let's put it that way. And in many ways, the Case IH brand is considered to be IH amongst all those people who are still involved.
And, you know, I'm sure writing this book served as some therapy for you. So you know, is there something that you learned as you traveled down the roads putting this together, maybe that you didn't realize or you didn't know until writing this book?
I think so. For example, I started asking, I asked the dealers, the 50 dealers, I think, throughout the country that I talked to, what their reactions were to the November 1984 announcement that Tenneco was buying out IH Farm Equipment. They all remembered where they were that moment just as much as they remembered the Kennedy assassination day.
Amazing. And then, so you're... I think this book came out in 2019, right? So
yes.
I'm just curious, what's some of the reaction that you've heard out there?
Mostly comments saying, that's what we felt, that's what we thought. That not enough testing, too much money going into dividends from shareholders, not enough plant improvement. I think most people, including the company people that are still around that I talk to, pretty much thinking the same way, that top management was not listening. They surely weren't listening to dealer organization. Every dealer, I think, felt the same way I did through those years. How come you folks are not listening to us? And that was part of the demise, or the cause of it, I believe.
I'm just curious, speaking with Paul Wallum again, this is a great book, and really for people in Western Illinois and Eastern Iowa that were so much impacted by International Harvester, whether, you know, through the dealer, as, you know, we get that perspective here from Paul, but we know so many people, you know, and I'm a kid that grew up in the 70s and 80s, so many of my friends, you know, fathers or grandparents, they worked at International Harvester, whether it be the East Moline plant or the Farmall plant in Rock Island. And, you know, the East Moline plant, and that's where my dad and my late grandfather worked, you know, no longer exists. It's been demolished, and it's a redeveloped area, kind of a mixed-use commercial residential. So that's gone, and I know they've tried to repurpose the Farmall facility in Rock Island. I know it's still up. I'm not sure what's all in that building. But it makes me sad, you know, that history is gone. And, you know, for a guy, you know, 1984 wasn't that long ago for me. It wasn't long ago for you, I know.
It was yesterday.
But for today's generation, that kind of is a long time ago now, when we really think about it. Do you, I don't know if it's fair to say, do you kind of wax poetic about, you know, those manufacturing facilities where that, you know, red tractor came out of? They're gone. I mean, does that make you sad at all, or reflective, I guess? It does for me, because my dad worked there.
Yes, and I guess reflective would be a good word, because, in fact, as we talked about Friday, I spent 6 weeks during a general management training program that I was on at East Moline Works, learning how the function of the factory was operating, and I did that all over the country until I became export manager. And I look back and I say, you know, those people had their hearts in it, just like police today. They were really doing their best to doing a good job, and they were doing a good job. But from the top, there was mistakes made that were gradually destroying it. Now, in recent, well, just last winter, I spent time with Scott Harris, who's now the KSIH general manager, and we spent time in Racine. They interviewed he and I together, talking about current times and old times, and in many ways, he carries forward that same attitude, and he was a car dealer at one time, so he understands the dealership. I think that KSIH is probably in good hands right now with leadership, looking at how they can help the dealers to function.
But, you know, how we began our conversation, again, speaking with Paul Wallum, you know, your belief is if IH would have stayed the course with farm equipment and trucks, they potentially still could be in business today, but their big mistake is, again, getting in the construction equipment business.
That would just be one of the mistakes, I believe, Jim. That one, plus, again, I consider the biggest one the carrying on top management deciding to continue paying high dividends through the years when they should be having been paying no dividends, but instead plowing that money into new plants or improvements in East Moline and Farm Hall and the other locations. That was probably the biggest single one. And then at the top, I come back to the criticism of top management. None of the directors in those years owned stock in the company. You don't find that much anymore. They had no skin in the game whatsoever. So they did what the president wanted them to do. And we had some weak presidents in those years.
All right. So Paul Wallum is the author. I know you can, if you want, this is a great piece of history, I'll call it, in this area. Again, the book is International Harvester, The Breakup, What Really Happened. It's a 192-page book. You can get it wherever you purchase a book at, if you want to do it through Amazon or whatever online site. You can do that. Paul, are you an Illinois farm kid? You grew up on an Illinois farm. Where'd you come from, as they say?
South of here, 100 miles, dairy farm outside of Ransom, Illinois.
Okay. All right. So I tracked down Paul over the weekend. I'm doing this interview on November the 30th, which is a Monday, and I tracked him down on Saturday because one of my ag broadcasting friends, Max Armstrong, spoke to him on WGN radio, and it's the first I'd heard of the book. And I said, "Wow, my dad worked at IH," and we had a nice little conversation on the phone Saturday. But you sound like one of those guys that, like, if you walk into the Alito Maid Rite and you sit down next to a guy at the counter, you could have a pretty interesting conversation with. You have that type of personality. And it was funny. This is how kind of I'll end the conversation today. I said, "Well, I'm from Alito." And Paul goes, "You're from Alito?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Do you know Rex McCorder?" And I'm like, "Well, heck yes, everybody knows Rex McCorder." But I appreciate your personality, and those are the type of people I know when you talk about these dealerships across the state and across the country, you know, in small town America. Those are the type of people and the stories you're able to pick up, which had to be pretty neat for you as you did this book.
It was a wonderful experience, and frankly, the book vastly exceeded my limitations. And let me clarify here. It's now available. I've licensed it to Sherry Schaefer in Greenville, Illinois. And if you look at heritageironmagazine.com, she sells the book now. You click on shop, and there it is.
All right, easy enough. And Paul Wallum, I appreciate the visit today. And as you mentioned, again, easy way to pick up this book, as Paul just mentioned. And again, great for this part of the country. Paul Wallum, you have a happy holiday season, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for calling, Jim. I appreciate it.
You're listening to WRMJ.